Shalom, and welcome to In the Beginning. My name is Shmuel Bowman, and I am a Torah scribe. Okay, hi Yoav.
Hey, hello.
We're doing something different. For last few years, I've been doing this, this podcast In the Beginning.
Yep, season 5, I believe.
Right, and it's been about really looking at Parshat HaShavua, the weekly Torah teaching. And as a Torah scribe, I'm always interested in looking at the letters. I'm also interested in looking at the deeper secrets that's going on in between the words, behind the words, according to traditions and legends. And that has been so cool, and I definitely plan on getting back to that. But I guess it was about a year before Zeta for you, my dad,
yeah.
Eric Bowman, Yitzhak ben Yisrael v'Sara Leah, Zichron Levracha, my dad passed away this past summer in July. Now we started actually learning Pirkei Avot. So what's Pirkei Avot? Pirkei Avot is actually a section of the Mishnah, right? Which, is rabbinic teachings going back over 2,000 years. And I often like to think of them as sound bites. You know, if you were to take a microphone like we're talking into right now and put it in front of a rabbi 2,000 years ago and say, okay, what's, you're like, a great rabbi, you're a great teacher, you're a great scholar. What's it all about? And they were like to give like some kind of a soundbite, something like that. But in fact, they're not simple soundbites at all. They're very deep. They're very complicated. They're very beautiful.
Yeah. And it's like everything they thought about their whole life in 1 second.
I know. It's like, can you imagine any of our listeners trying to do that? I mean, it's just to think about that.
Amazing. And to simple people, that would be an amazing phenomenon. But take the greatest, sages and thinkers of the generation. It's just, yeah. It's a treasure.
Yeah. So Zeta and I, my dad and I, had the great schut, the great privilege of learning this together in the last year before he passed away. And we'd learn every week, and we would just take one piece, one little nugget, and just chew on it and have a great time. And one of the things that was really, really exciting, and I'm sorry, actually, we didn't record them.
Hmm.
Yeah, but they're in the recording in here in my memory.
Yeah, for sure.
But some things that we talked about is he would always connect whatever we were teaching to his life, whether in his work in volunteering, whether it was as a lawyer, of course, whether it was working in his work in synagogue life. Whatever it happened to be, he always had a way of connecting it to that. And I thought that was just precious. Yeah. Anyway, so here we are. As I mentioned, Zeta, my dad, left us, left the world, went to Olam HaEmet, went to the real world, went to the real place, this past summer. And you had this idea. I want to talk about what that idea was.
Yeah. So, there's a really powerful idea that kind of helps me, cope with Zeta being missing. And that is that when you continue the ways of someone after he passes away, he's still kind of with you. This is a very special tradition that the two of you shared, studying Pirkei Avot, which means the chapters of our forefathers. And it's all about tradition. As we'll soon see, the first Mishnah, the first verse here, does talk about exactly that, the tradition, where it all began from, Mount Sinai, and how what we got there made it all the way to today. And it's so special that you got to learn that with your father. And now we get to continue that same tradition, again, father and son learning, in his memory, in his merit. And I think it's going to be really special.
Absolutely. So may all of our teachings really be in his merit and in honor, truly, and in great memory of Eric Bowman, Yitzchak, Reb Yitzchak, Ben Yisrael v'Sara Leah. Okay, so we're going to start at the beginning.
Yes.
Okay, and By the way, if anybody is interested in following along, they're more than welcome. We're using a wonderful, amazing online teaching called Sefaria. That's S-E-F-A-R-I-A. And you can get that at sefaria.org. If you're interested, and just go to Pirkei Avot. That's P-I-R-K-E-I-A-V-O-T. I'll put that in the show notes so that people can link to it directly if you'd like to, and you don't have to worry about grabbing a pencil or whatever, pen. And if you want, you can go there and you can follow along, or you can go and open up a good old-fashioned book and go that way. That's fine, too. We're going to start at the very beginning. It's chapter 1, verse 1.
I just want to say it's a really special it's a really special part of the Mishnah to study, because in general, the Mishnah is a collection of laws and halacha, and this one is unique. It's the only one that just discusses how to be a good person, just moral dilemmas and values. So
very cool. You know what? Why don't you kick us off and read it in Hebrew?
Okay. Moshe kibel Torah miSinai. ומסרה ליהושע. ויהושע לזקנים, וזקנים לנביאים, ונביאים מסרוע לאנשי כנסת הגדולה. הם אמרו שלושה דברים. הבו מתונים בדין, והעמידו תלמידים הרבה, ועשו סייג לתורה.
Okay, so we're starting off with what a way to open, right? You're talking about, again, the line of tradition and continuity. Moshe, right, receives the Torah at Mount Sinai and gives it over to, communicates it to Joshua. Joshua to the Skenim, the elders to the prophets to the men of the great assembly. Okay, and that kind of like gives us the chain, the continuity from one generation to the other. And so I think one of the things that jumps to my mind, if I may, just kind of ideas that flood to my mind, is that the Torah given to us at Mount Sinai is not a static document.
No, it's a live document. That's exactly
right.
That's exactly it. And this reminds me of Pesach a lot, because what we do in Pesach is we sit around the table as a family, and the main thing is Haggadah. You have to speak. Haggadah means to speak. That's the main idea of Pesach. You have to tell your son. That's what it's all about.
Right.
It's all about, it has to be a live tradition.
You know, it's so funny. I remember the first Pesach when you were a baby. So you were less than a year old. And you were in your high chair. And we set the table. And the Passover's table, the Pesach Seder table, has a lot of symbols and things that you would normally not see at a regular dinner table. You've got a special plate with all sorts of things going on there. It was beautifully done. It was very, very special. And I remember you looked at the table, you kind of raised your eyebrows.
As you still do.
And I said to Ima, that's it. We have just fulfilled the mitzvah of Pesach. Okay, we've just told the story by setting the table, and you has just asked the question by raising your eyebrows, Manishtana halayla hazeh, what is this thing? And I said, we can just...
That's it.
We can just go to bed. We just go to bed now. we didn't. But yeah. So very well put, yeah. And so the Torah is not, right? The Bible, is not static. It's not something that we kind of like, I don't know, put behind glass, like in a museum and look at it and go, oh, look at this. It's a very ancient document, and let's preserve it as such and make sure that it's at the proper humidity and no dust and no all that. No, it's used, it's worn, it gets broken, it gets ripped, it gets torn, it gets stained, it gets burned, and it gets drowned, and it has to continue to be, in a sense, has to be alive,
And I think it gives us like that responsibility and even the opportunity to be bold about it. It's not like Moshe received the Torah from Sinai and that was it. And then no one touched it.
Right.
He passed it to him and he passed it to him. And you know what? I'm sure they didn't exactly pass it down exactly the same way. Like the principles, of course, stayed the same, but the way Moshe told to Yeshua the Torah was not the same way Yeshua told Zkenim, and not the same way that they told Nevi'im.
Right.
Then it branches out more and more and more, and now there's millions and millions of Jews who are studying Torah, and each of them has their own thing. And here we are sitting here, 2024, studying Pirkei Avot, like no one has done before.
Oh, Oh, amazing. And it's not like we say, oh, like, you know, if it were to say Moses received the Torah at Mount Sinai, and, you know, and here it is today. It's right. So that means like the only person in the Torah in all of history that we can turn to, you know, that then go to it and say, oh, only Moshe knew, only Moshe received it. No, right. in a sense, it seems to me that every time he transmits it, including all the way to us, it's as if we received the Torah.
I agree. Yeah. Exactly.
So let's take a look here. So this is really mind blowing. They say three things. Who's they?
The Knesset HaGdola, the 120 sages that made the assembly.
Okay. So isn't that amazing that, first of all, the fact that they, I just want to say, one of the cool things about Safari is you can click on a word. Sometimes if it's hyperlinked, it can actually.
Magic word.
Second, let's close that there. That's in. If you go, they. So sometimes you can click on a word. And you can actually get to something really, really cool. Let's take a look at it. I always like Bartonura. Let's see, they to the elders. Here's they. So Bartonura, that's to let you know who Bartonura is, an Italian rabbi. So you got to love that. And he says that when they're talking about they, where is it here? They stated many things. Rather, they said these three things because they contain within them the preservation of the Torah. I also think it's really, really interesting that when it says they, and you just said it's about 120?
120 people.
Leaders
of the Jewish
people. Wise men.
Including Mordechai, by the way, from the story of Purim.
Oh, wow.
That's the level. People we read about.
But isn't it interesting that they, all 120 of them, all said the same three things? That strikes me as be amazing that, you know, where are you going to get 120 people today?
Well, for instance, in the Knesset.
Oh, yes. By contrast, perhaps. Yeah. Although not everything. I have to say that there has been, it's true that the 120 members of the Israeli parliament are not known for always agreeing. And yet we have seen since October the 7th. Things that everyone has agreed to.
Right. And everyone has agreed. I think it's not by chance that they're called Knesset. I think there's potential. I'm not here to bash the Knesset for what
they're doing. No, of course not.
I just expect more. I know that the people who lead the state of Israel today have the potential to be like Anshei Knesset HaGdola, who had this amazing unity to all agree on three things.
Very good. So let's take a look at those three things. What's the first one? Be patient. Does that translate correctly?
I'm not sure. No, I'm not sure.
Why don't you give us a better, because the English, I just want to point this out to everybody who's listening as well. Be careful of translations, even in our beloved Safaria. Yeah. Translations are apt to be interpreted differently.
For sure.
And that's totally fair. It's always good to go back to the Hebrew, to look at the Hebrew directly, which, by the way, was one of the fun things that Zayda and I would do. And that is because I had a slightly better understanding of Hebrew than he did. So I was able to get a little bit of insight into the more accurate Hebrew translation from the Hebrew. But we have to be careful of translations, but they're there and we're grateful for them. But let's take a look at the Hebrew. What's going on with the first of the three things?
So he says, Hevu metunim badin.
Mm.
They say Hevu metunim means to be matun. I mean, as the translation says, it could be patient, but if we're looking at the deen means making a law, making a decision. Many times when you go to a rabbi, he makes a decision on a subject. And they're telling you here, don't necessarily take the right or the left, be somewhere in the middle. Try to be fair, try to be just. That's the way I understand it.
Right.
To be matun.
Right.
Like, don't be radical.
Don't be radical.
And that's kind of the Torah. The Torah has this, they say there's the Torah has 49 sides to each direction, 49% each direction, and you give that 1% to make it a decision.
Right.
And I think it represents balance, and you have to be careful that if you're saying Torah and it doesn't feel balanced, it might not be exactly what the Torah wanted.
It was very interesting because not everyone knows this, but you have graduated law school.
Yep.
And I remember when you were doing a course in mediation. Mm-hmm. And you were talking about the idea that the goal in mediation was that everyone should come out feeling as if they gained something.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it needs to be a win-win or no deal. That's it. Has to be.
Okay, let's take a look at the second of the three.
Okay, the second one is V'hamidu talmidim harbe. So this would mean literally have many, many students, have many disciples. I like the word ha'amidu. Ha'amidu means make them stand up. And I think what they're kind of hinting here is don't just have students who will follow you around and not have their own decision and not have their own say. Make them stand up. When they stand up, they might say different things than you. The main goal is have pluralism, have as much people as you can. Try to make it very, very, you know, disperse and not necessarily that they're all going to listen to you.
So it's very, very interesting because the translation says raise many disciples, which isn't exactly the same thing, is it?
I feel that it's lacking that extra depth.
Yeah. I think you're absolutely right. I think that's a really, really important point. Okay. And the third one?
Vasu siyag la Torah.
Okay.
This is a principle that we see many times in halacha, making a siyag. A siyag means a fence.
Yeah.
It means to make a fence around the Torah. For instance, it says in the Torah not to eat, what's it called? A baby sheep?
A kid. Baby goat. Baby goat.
In its mother's milk.
Right.
It doesn't say not to eat
cheeseburger.
And yet we do because of the
We don't need a cheeseburger because if you're not going to eat a cheeseburger, you're certainly not going to cook a baby goat in its mother's milk.
Right.
That's the fence.
Exactly. Right? That's the fence. You'd be careful not to do this because, you know, we know human nature and it's going to lead to that.
It was very interesting. I remember many years ago, I had a chance to meet a educational psychologist by the name of Michael DeSisto. Mm-hmm. And he was very much into building fences, especially around, I guess, educating about behavior. Especially behavior that could get you in trouble. Mm-hmm. And so at his school, where he had a lot of teenagers who had the potential perhaps of getting into trouble. He had a rule, no soft drinks, like no Coca-Cola. Hmm. So you think, oh, come on, why no Coca-Cola? So he says, well, if I have a rule, no Coca-Cola, then if they break the rule, the worst that's happened is that they've had Coca-Cola. And they didn't find a bottle of vodka or something like that and get into trouble.
Right.
The same thing, I think he said he had a rule, no smoking cigarettes.
Mm. Oh, so come on. Smoke other
drinks. Exactly. Yeah. Or whatever happened. So it was kind of like this fence. So I remember him describing there used to be a game that we used to play as a kid. It's called Red Rover.
Mm. Yeah, sure.
Red Rover. We call Yob over. Okay. Right. And we're supposed to all hold hands and you're supposed to run like a crazy person
and try to break through.
Yeah. So he said, what if you were playing Red Rover on the edge of a cliff?
Oh, you would not run as fast.
Or you'd break through and you'd fall off the cliff.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Red Rover could become actually a very, very dangerous game. So his point about the fence was move away from the cliff. Move away from the cliff, which is an interesting paradigm for the idea of making a fence around the Torah.
Right.
Because what you're doing is you're saying, listen, if you break this particular halacha, if you break this particular law, it's very serious.
Right.
So if we place a fence around it, that moves you further away from the chances of, and a lot of people, I've heard a lot of comments like, oh, come on, that's so silly. It's so archaic. What were the rabbis thinking?
Right.
Come on. That's not what the law says. Why should there be a fence around the Torah? But nobody questions the fence around, a nuclear power plant.
Yeah.
Right. Or no one questions a barrier or a passcode that you need in order to get to a high risk security area or a hazmat situation. You got to put on a special suit, right? Your Uncle Mark,
right.
Your brother, works in a place where he has to get all zooped up in special hazmat suits and has special readers that indicate, make sure that he's in a safe space. Those are all fences to protect you from things. And I think that that's exactly what fence around the Torah means.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It reminds me of a parable. Is it mashal?
Yeah.
That my Rosh Yeshiva, when I went to Yeshiva High School, used to tell all the time. He said, if you give a kid a bike and put him on the, similar to your story, and then put him on a really, on a really high skyscraper, would he ride it? No, he'd be completely paralyzed. Yeah. He'd just sit there like, nope, not going anywhere.
Right.
But if you put a fence around it, yeah, you drive around safely. And something about that fence actually allows you to live a freer life.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the concept.
Wow.
That's
wow. I love
I feel
that.
A bit lost
that.
In modern times. Yeah. Like, oh no, you're limiting me. Now I can't do what I want.
I can't be free.
You can be free. Free to do what? To wreck your own life.
Right. Right.
You're that kid on a bike, and then.
Or yeah, as you say, completely frozen because it's just overwhelming.
Right.
Instead, you wind up, yeah, okay, yeah, yeah.
And then when you have this set of like rules, you can just go and then be free within that rules. You can really express yourself.
Wow, amazing, amazing.
Yeah. What would Zeta say? Or what did he say? Or what would he say?
Yeah, so, gosh, he talked about the idea of, he definitely liked the idea of Ave Matinim Bedin. He loved the idea of balance in law. Mm. He was not a person. He was a person of great principles.
Yeah,
great principles. His philosophies of swimming against the stream. You know, being like a salmon.
Yeah.
You know, a little bit of that, kind of a little bit of a contrarian. He was a very principled person. Very, very principled. There were things, you know, and yet, when it came to relationships, human relationships, business, mm-hmm. He was a very big believer of really just, you know, being patient, finding that middle ground, finding that golden pathway. And so that was a big thing with him. So he definitely would agree with that. I think the idea of having many students, yeah, he was definitely into the idea of growth in Torah learning and in numbers. And he supported that. He was a big supporter. He used to teach and he used to study Torah. And he would love the discussions, and certainly was somebody who wanted just to see study of Torah grow and grow and grow. And yeah, as far as a fence around the Torah, we talked about that a lot. We talked about a lot. That was a discussion we really drilled really deeply into. Yeah. And he talked about the idea of in law, how there are a system of laws in order to keep you distant away from really messing up and tripping up really, really big. It has nothing to do with being immature and juvenile. That's human nature. Mm. That's best as I can recall. But this has been our discussion today, I think, has been a real honor for Zeta's memory.
Absolutely. Keeping it going, just like the Torah, just like the tradition should be.
Exactly. Well, it's been really good. I think we're off to a good start.
Yeah.
And we will regroup next week for the next piece of wisdom.
All right, stay tuned.
All right, stay tuned. Take care. Please join me every week for new ideas, and let's share these secrets together. Shalom. I'm Shmuel Bowman.